Now that the weather is warming up and drying out for most of us, we can get outside on a more regular basis and notice things like those little heaves of dirt in the yard where some kind of boring animal plowed up the dirt. Not just the yard either. If you keep a garden, you may notice dirt mounds there too, some where your plants used to be. We'll take up critters as a first topic in this month's gardening, or this week's gardening Q&A. Early in the pandemic, when many people took up gardening for something to do, we reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and found Lynn Kunstman, who joins us weekly during the growing season, to field our many questions on successful gardening, or at least attempting it. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Critters, what are you seeing in your yard? I noticed a bunch of dirt heaves in mine.
Not too much in mine right now. We're not having too big a problem at this point. But in the past, you know, I've seen rodents, we've seen ground squirrels, mice, rats, they're out there. This year, not so bad. Not as much as I have in the last several years, so.
Mm-hmm. Does it matter really whether it's a gopher, a mole, a vole, whatever? I mean, they're all out there in some places.
It does. Mm-hmm. Gophers are going to dig down and eat entire plants. They're the ones that you can see, ground squirrels will do this too, pulling an entire zucchini bush down underground to eat. And it's kind of a shocking thing to look out in your yard and see the thing being jerked down into the burrow.
Oh, you've actually watched the process happen.
Oh yeah. It was like a 2-foot zucchini plant, and I was looking out the window, and it just in little jerks disappeared underground. So they're quite strong, and they have to dig through the soil. So gophers and ground squirrels will probably do the most damage to crops that you want to keep, intact, because they eat roots and bulbs and entire plants. The voles really are just grass eaters. They're grazers. So they actually make tunnels. They do make underground tunnels, but many of their tunnels are through grass areas where they're eating the base of the grasses. And so they're making little tunnels there above ground. So for those, you have to set traps above ground. And if you have, I don't know with the voles what kind of traps they recommend. I would imagine a snap trap would work, although they are so tiny, and they're only eating grasses. So most people, really aren't bothered that much by voles in the garden because grasses are not that critical a thing. And then moles are not vegetarians. They are insectivores. And even though they make those ridged tunnels along the surface, you go out and you look, it looks like a long line of little volcanic mountaintops in your garden. And that's because they are swimming right under the surface of the soil with their big paddle feet. And they're looking for, they really do have big, like paddly, they look like they're swimming.
It's like flippers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like flippers. And they are eating insects and worms and those kinds of things. They are not, the problem is that they can heave some of your plants out as they burrow through the soil, but they are not eating the plants. So you can just replace the plants, and crush down their burrows. You can catch them with a spike trap. You don't want your cat to eat them because they are toxic. So, they're an interesting little critter. And they have, by the way, they have two-way fur because they have to back up in their tunnels. And so their fur lays down both ways.
Oh, wow.
It's very cool to pet a mole.
Huh.
You can't
rub it the wrong way.
You cannot rub it the wrong way like you can your cat and get your hand shredded.
Right.
And all the others have the one-way fur like normal mammals do. But moles are unique in that they... their fur goes either way.
So that's really interesting. They're toxic to cats, though?
They are. Yeah, they are a little toxic. They're a different critter from the rodents that are out there, which your cat can eat all at once as long as they haven't been poisoned by a neighbor. That's the issue. You don't want to poison these things because they come above ground sometimes to die, and then things like hawks or cats or dogs who are all opportunistic feeders will take those animals and eat them and be poisoned themselves. So be very, very careful with baits if you are choosing to use those, and we hope you are not.
Okay, that answers a question then about whether you should set your cat loose on them, which is probably not a great idea anyway. Go ahead.
If they're in your yard, then if your cat is catching mice in your yard, it's fine. You know, lots of cats are mousers, but the other thing is that lots of cats are birders too.
Yep.
And they have a preferred prey choice, and cats are wreaking havoc on our bird population. So best to keep your kitties inside and in a catio.
We had a catio. Yes, we need to reconstruct that one because the cat really misses it. But I was reading the numbers just this morning. It was something like four or five billion birds a year killed by domestic cats, and maybe even something like 20 billion rodents.
Right. Yeah. So they kill a lot of little, and they kill weasels and other, you know, small mammals of all types. So it's really a problem. And of course, when they get feral, they're out there in the wild just doing their cat thing. They're predators, and they cause a lot of damage out there.
Well, speaking of which, the other question I had about cats, now that we've turned in this direction, is about, they sure do love a fresh garden, don't they?
They do, and they especially like it if you're trying to grow some catnip for them. They'll just go, and you'll find your catnip completely eaten and squashed down and covered with cat fur.
Uh-huh.
Although occasionally a cat will just ignore it. They're not. You know, they're individuals. Some of them can't stay away from this stuff, and others of them are. I'm not.
Yeah, but I've learned one of the values of putting a little fencing around your garden structure is to make sure that the cats don't get in and decide, oh, loose stuff, I can go here.
Oh, yeah, no, litter box. Thanks for putting all this in for me to just go poop in.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, no, they can be very damaging that way. They can certainly pull up all your young seedlings and it's not fun to be out there weeding and run into something, a present your cat left.
No, yeah, I've run into a few of those presents, thanks to the neighbors. Yeah.
Thanks, kitty. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Lynn Kunzman back with us on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners, answering my questions and yours about gardening and garden care. We're right getting into the heart of growing season now, although I think I did see there was a chance for some frost on the Rogue Valley in some valleys, not the Rogue Valley, but some of the western valleys Friday.
Right.
So just keep an eye on conditions. And you can join us right now with your questions and comments by phone 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760 to do it by phone, or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Dan and Neeland dropped off a phone question about periwinkle. He wants to know how it manages to spread its seed. Is it through distribution from other animals? Does it have rhizomes or something else? And finally, what is the best way to eradicate it?
Yeah, that is vinca, is periwinkle. That's mm-hmm. the other name for it. I don't know about the seeding. I would imagine it also is able to spread by seed, but mostly it is a rhizomonous, stoloniferous kind of spreading. It just sends out shoots that then root. And so it will just spread like ivy does. And so if it does set seed, I would imagine that birds can pick that up and fly it away and drop it, you know, in places where it could germinate out there in the wild. And the best way to deal with it is like you do with crabgrass or anything else. Dig down, get the roots out, get all the roots out, and just remove it. You know, do a section at a time and just keep at it until you get the stuff out of your garden.
Wow. So it's generally confined area. You got a big yard or something, and you're trying to get rid of something like that. You're going to spend years on your hands and knees, it feels like.
Yeah. You know, there are things. I mean, there are some sprays that are organic. There's stuff called Burnout, which is a citrus and clove-based oil spray that you put on the plant, and basically it burns the plant. The tops of the plant, so it can't photosynthesize. You have to reapply it probably every couple weeks because, of course, the plant's going to send up new growth, you know, in an attempt to stay alive. So you have to keep applying religiously The other one is a 30% agricultural vinegar. And so then your garden will smell like salad for a couple days. But it is very effective at burning the tops of the plants so that then the roots are put under stress to produce more growth. And if you, once again, reapply when as soon as you see new growth, if there's nothing there to photosynthesize, those roots will die. They require the leafy structure to perform photosynthesis. So if you can keep the green tops down, then you can kill off large sections of it. Yeah, but I don't I never recommend things like crossbow or Roundup or those kinds of things, because there have been so many links to cancers in pets and children and stuff. So
yeah, since you mentioned this, and I was taking the dog out for a walk the other day, I realized, wait a minute, why is all this grass dead here? And not, oh boy, I better pull the dog out of here.
Yeah, don't let the dog walk through that. Yeah, yeah. You know, people, their kids are out playing on it. You know, they're putting weed and feed on their lawns because they want a beautiful, even lawn. And then they let their kids out to play on it. It's kind of scary. Anyway,
Yeah. So, all right. So at least in the application of the organic stuff, there's a rhythm to it. Mm-hmm. There's a maintenance cycle, which is a good practice for a gardener, I would think.
Right. Yeah. So yes, you are going to have to reapply, because they're not just going to kill the roots. They're going to kill what they come in contact with, which is the leafy tops. And so, yeah.
All right. In terms of things like watering, because I know in the Rogue Valley, there are probably some people making adjustments. They didn't have to do anything in the way of watering through like the first half of May, and now it seems to be drying out. So, is the stuff going to be okay for a while? Do you want to get up on a regular irrigation schedule now?
You want to get on a regular irrigation. The critical thing is if you're planting seeds directly in your garden, you need to be watering them every day so that, you know, the seed bed stays moist, because if it dries out and the seedlings are coming up, they could desiccate. So you want to make sure that until...
That was desiccate with two S's, I want to point out.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So you want to make sure that you're watering every day until everything is up and growing. And then it's kind of you just have to watch. I mean, if we have cool, overcast weather like this, you don't necessarily need to water your tomatoes and peppers again, you know, if you watered them yesterday. Mm-hmm. So you can get by with watering every couple days. Or if you have a drip system, you know, you set it for every other day until the weather gets up to triple digits, and then you better be watering every day, because... stuff is just gonna take a hit if you don't keep things mulched and moist.
Yeah, Joy was observing just yesterday, trying to get some weeds out, that the ground dries out and hardens up pretty fast.
So fast, mm-hmm. So fast. Yeah, and you know, we think we've had all this rain. We really haven't had that many inches of rain. We certainly aren't up to normal rainfall at this point.
Nope.
You know, and even normal rainfall in this valley, it's only 19 inches. Per year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're living back in Kentucky where it rains every other day in the summer, you know, an inch or so a day. We've got real dry conditions here in the valley, and they're getting drier.
Yeah, indeed. So this is where a moisture meter comes in handy, though, too, if you're trying to make sure that you keep the new soil up to snuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's good, because that moisture meter, you can put it down far enough so that you can see, well, how far is my watering getting? You know, you want the water to get down there, you know, 6 to 12 inches at least, so that everything is wet down there and the roots can keep going down.
Okay. I was looking at the list of things that are okay to direct seed into the garden in May, and I see a couple of kinds of spinach on there. I did get a spinach crop last year, and a pretty good one, but boy, it's kind of here and then gone suddenly, isn't it?
Yeah. So spinach, you know, it's one of those things that you can pick the outer leaves for a while, but then, you know, it starts to bolt once the weather gets warm, and then it turns bitter and that kind of stuff. You know, there are probably, I don't know, I don't grow spinach, there are probably varieties that are slow bolt, or, you know, they resist bolting, and those would be the ones to look for if you're buying seed. And then there is, I think, either Malabar or New Zealand spinach is one that grows through the summer. But Once again, that's not one that you're going to find on a local seed rack. You're going to have to look, you know, probably in a catalog to order those.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So certainly not the kind of, well, nothing's native here. I guess we figured out with most of the food crops we grow.
Right. The food items are all old, except for tomatoes and peppers, mm-hmm. right? They're all old world, and potatoes. Those are our new world crops. But everything else has come to us from the old world.
So potatoes in particular, because I get interested every year, and then often chicken out and don't put them in the ground. But is there any particular stuff you need? I mean, seeding is still okay for right now.
Yeah, if you can find the seed potatoes in the they're probably discounted at this point. But yes, you could put them in, and they do fine. And then you have to mound up as the shoots come out of the soil. Yeah, they're easy to grow. Once you have them in your garden, they're probably just going to keep coming back from the ones you missed collecting during harvest. They do really well here. I personally don't grow them because they take up so much space, mm-hmm. and they're so easy and cheap to get at the store.
Ah.
But some people want to grow their own, and it's great to do that. I also don't grow corn. Same reason, mm-hmm. I can get it. And you no longer have to grow corn. When I was a child, you had to put the water on to boil, run out to the garden, collect the corn, bring it in, shuck it, and get it into that boiling water to lock the sugars in. Now with these super sweet corns, you don't have to worry about that. And so you can get great sweet corn at the farmer's market and the grocery stores and yeah.
Well, but that's a great point, though, that we have never covered before. Is like, choosing what you want to plant in your garden, it's stuff you want to eat that you would have to, that you would have to put an effort into to find in a store, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. And so I really, I focus on peppers and tomatoes and cucumbers, melons, those things that we love. And we love to have them fresh. Melons in the stores are picked not ripe. And so you can't really get, same thing with tomatoes. We know that, right? Mm-hmm. And so the things that I want to have really ripe from my yard, I grow. But the things that are sort of bulk items, I don't usually grow onions either, because once again, I can get them, for my purposes at the grocery store, and they take a lot of room and water. So, I grow the things that herbs, yeah.
Yeah, this makes sense, because in our conversations with the food people in the past, we pointed out the fact that things like tomatoes have been built to travel and not necessarily built for flavor. And so if you grow them yourself, you got a whole different kind of situation.
Exactly.
All right, we'll pick up the conversation next week. Lynn Kunzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners joins us on Wednesdays at 8:35 or 8:40, depending on when we land, to take up the gardening questions of the week. You can send those any old time to jx@jeffnet.org, and Lynn is happy to answer within her knowledge. If she doesn't know the answer, she'll know someone who does. Lynn, always good to have you on The Exchange.
Thanks a lot.
All right, talk to you next week.